Welcome back to our anime show. I'm Binge Monster.
And I'm a Green Queen.
And today we get to talk about something I'm excited about because it brings together my two worlds. My absolute passion in life, which is anime, and my professional life, which is the world of artificial intelligence. And today we've picked a pretty interesting topic, wouldn't you say?
I honestly would say it's going to be interesting.
Today we're going to talk about translating subtitles using AI and whether or not it's a good thing. There was an interesting article that came out recently that has pretty mixed responses from the general public, which I think is to be expected. Mm-hmm. That Crunchyroll has recently announced that they're going to start using AI to translate subtitles. And in addition to that, there is a big movement by the manga industry and particularly the publishers to start translating manga in AI. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be our focus of our conversation today. So to kick things off, there was an announcement, I believe it was last week, that one of the very prominent manga publishers, Shogakukan, which I think I just butchered, Shogakukan,
but Shogakukan?
Mm. I don't immediately recognize it. I for some reason, I feel like this is a publisher that publishes more shoujo manga than shonen, because it's not Shonen Jump, so... I mean, that sounds ignorant of me. That sounds so naive. If it's not Shonen Jump, it's not anything. That's not what I mean. It's obviously a major publisher. I just, like, off the top of my head, don't know what they put out. But they're investing heavily in a startup called Orange, which I think is ironic, given just that, like, the other topic is Crunchyroll and they're Orange. But a startup called Orange, which is setting out to translate manga and distribute it to different countries around the world. And they claim that once the contract is signed, that they can translate 50,000 manga in one shot in about 3 days into many, many different languages, which has caught the ire of people whose whole jobs are to translate these works into the respective languages in the respective countries that have people that read in those languages. Mm-hmm. And this is a particularly challenging job because oftentimes, and I don't know if you've seen this, I'd be curious what your take is here, some of the nuances of the Japanese language or the humor that is like pretty culturally specific to Japan doesn't always immediately and perfectly translate into English. And so these translators have to do a lot of the heavy lifting to make sure that it does translate in a way that is like you can register, right? Mm-hmm. And you've probably seen this in anime.
Oh, for sure. I mean, this is actually so funny that we're actually having this conversation because quite recently, my boyfriend found this comedian whose name regrettably escapes me, who was a comedian. He's an American from Queens comedian. Mm-hmm. And he went to live in Beijing, China, mm-hmm. to learn the Chinese language and understand comedy there, which at the time that this was all happening, which was truly years ago, there, uh-huh. at least in Beijing or where he was staying, there was no comedy scene. So this comic, you know, came there, and it's not like he sort of pioneered stand-up comedy in China, but he, in this town or wherever he was, like, had a show and other Chinese artists came, but he spent a whole year just living with a family in China and promoting his show and really learning about the nuance of Chinese culture and having mm-hmm. a very deep understanding because, it's like to what you were saying, like, not everything is gonna, like, especially with comedy, not everything's going to land the same way. I mean, if you look at Jujutsu Kaisen, like famously, they change one of the lines to be something like, oh yeah, I don't think this was in the original. I think this was translated for when it came or was translated into English, but it's Itadori and Toto and they're having some sort of conversation. Oh, what kind of girls do you like? Oh, I like girls like Jennifer Lawrence. And like, I don't think I don't think that was something that was in the original I don't think the original Japanese text said Jennifer Lawrence. But contextually and at the time it came out, and kind of funny that was whoever translated its version of like the ideal woman at the time, right? I think that's funny. But those are just kind of two examples to really drive home that there is cultural difference, and like jokes can land in different ways. It's just, it takes a little bit of context to make the joke really land for its designated audience. And even though, and I, you know, this is something that even now I watch a lot of English dub, not to go on a mini rant, but they are making anime, they are actively working to make anime more accessible to crowds. Like, why would they even make, you know, English dub? Why would they even make Portuguese dub or what have you if they did not want those communities to be able to take in this information or take in the show, the content in that way? Yeah, so I think that nuance really does need to be there, and I just think it really makes it more special for those communities. And you know, I find it special when I have something that I'm like, oh yes, and as an American that makes more sense to me that way. So like, I was able to enjoy that a little bit more, I think. Those are my two cents on it.
No, you bring up something really interesting, and I feel like that is a trend that is newer, really. When you go onto a platform like Crunchyroll, for example, and you are looking at a show, and they have this like accordion style listing of all the different seasons, and you start to see German and Arabic and Italian and Portuguese, to your point, right? I think Portuguese, probably because, as we discussed a couple episodes before, that Brazil is one of the largest consumers of anime, and so they speak Portuguese. So that makes a little bit more sense than thinking, like, why are they adhering to Portugal? But not that Portugal isn't important, it obviously is, like, but it's a smaller market, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, you would think, but I feel like I always flag, like, oh, Portuguese. I don't know, I always flag that on the list. It's there.
But that's newer, right? They don't do that for all of the series. There's usually a select few, and they're definitely trying to play catch up. But to your point, I really applaud it. In the beginning, it was a little annoying, because when I was trying to find the right season, and by the way, it wasn't annoying that they were dubbing these in these different languages. It was annoying the way that Crunchyroll designed their interface to make it easy to find the one that you can watch. I don't quite know why they decided to do it that way instead of just making it a setting on the video. I feel like we've talked about this.
All right, tech guy.
But really, like, if you're watching a video, you should just be able to press a button and switch between any language freely, versus like when you're trying to find the right season and episode, having to find the right season and episode in your language. I don't know. You get what I'm trying to say.
We have talked about this. We have talked about this because you spend, I mean, and you obviously can talk about this or specify, but you spend way more time looking at things like this and making sure that they are user-friendly. And throughout the years, we have seen Crunchyroll do some amazing things with their interface. And every time it's a very good quality of life change. And I think rarely one that we're like, you didn't need to do that.
For sure. Anyways, but going back to the conversation about language, because that's really what this is about, it'll be interesting to see how well the AI systems that they're using to do this translation work, because some of this nuance is difficult even for humans. So I question the quality that we're going to see. And as I said, even when they do direct translations, they may be a little bit confusing, because there's not necessarily a human layer there to augment it. You were going to say something.
Yeah. So before we even jump in, I wanted to ask if you could, for the listeners and me, kind of give a very basic, as much as you can, understanding of how an AI system might translate a manga, if you will. Right? Because is that what we're talking about? Like, are they pulling text from manga, or are they pulling text from the script? And then, like, are they running that? Like, what is that process like? Just to kind of give me a little bit of an idea.
I think the simplest way that you could look at it is to think about using like a Google Translate. It's really quite similar. Ultimately, I think what will likely happen is you have a what's called a language model. This is a type of an AI. AI is an umbrella term, and there are many different types of AI algorithms out there that are developed. Each type of algorithm is usually designed to solve a specific problem. And so, for example, you wouldn't use a language model to hope to use AI to look at an image for something and determine if it's a cat or a dog. You would use an image classifier, which in its name, it's actually verbatim what it is. You're taking an image and you're classifying it. An AI version of that, like an image classifier, to take that task on. So there are different algorithms under the AI umbrella that exist to solve very specific problems in the real world. And in this case, probably they're using some sort of natural language processing model. That's the umbrella within the AI umbrella that focuses on language. The way that it would probably work is, I imagine that this company, Orange, that is going to do this work to translate manga, created a gigantic corpus of documents in many different languages that are already translated manually. And it uses that, and typically there's like a multi-step process to building an algorithm. First, you take a data set, so this would be an example of that, like a corpus of documents, some of which are translated, some of which are not already in multiple languages. And then you take your algorithm and then you train it on that data set. Think about it like as if you were teaching a toddler. How could you teach a toddler to say the word cat in English and in German? You'd put it right in front of them and you'd have it read it over and over again until once it sees that word, it already knows what it's supposed to be.
So they probably took works that have already been translated, such as, like, say, the entirety of season one and two of Jujutsu Kaisen and
Sure.
Black Clover and, you know, what other, like, maybe even like light novels and stuff. They have the English version, or pardon me, the Japanese original and the English, and then they put it in, and the AI goes, ah, yes, this and this and this and this and this.
Yeah, and I think in addition to that, they probably also take things like the dictionary, like an English Japanese dictionary, or any work, any literary work, anything with language where they can see the English and other language combined and that they could use as training data or as ground truth data, as we call it.
Well, so something that's coming to my mind, and I just want you to verify it. So, like, with doing this, like, I guess it makes sense to do the dictionary, right? But it does, in my mind, make sense to use something that has truly already passed by the hands of real actual people that have gone page by page, you know, character by character, and contextually made something that would be consumable for another audience. And then it could ideally start to pick up some of those maybe nuances. Because we're talking about art, because we're not just talking about, like, literally translating Japanese to English, we're talking about translating, like, a feeling, an emotion, like, and things like that over to be consumed by another language, right?
Yeah, so you're picking up on something really interesting, which is like sentiment, right? So like on one hand, there's like a Japanese word for damn it, right? For example, and that could have tons of implications, right? Like, is it an angry damn it with an exclamation mark, or is it a damn it? And like they're sad with where you would put an ellipses afterwards. And so, I mean, I think you're picking up on something really interesting where just the word directly translated alone may not be enough. And that's why I would say that like the dictionary alone is probably not a great just ground truth because, I mean, you've taken foreign language. We both took foreign language in college. If you had a dictionary, that wouldn't be enough to learn. What did you take, Spanish?
I wound up taking Spanish, yeah.
That wouldn't be enough to learn Spanish, because once you start putting words together in a sentence, you have to conjugate, and there's all these rules. And so you would basically want as broad a data set as possible that encompasses as many different language scenarios that the algorithm would need to see when it actually is doing its thing for real. So you would want full sentences, poems, songs, maybe different places where you can see examples of, to your point, different sentiment, even with the same words or even with the same sentences together, so that it can have that as a reference for the future. And then when it comes across something similar, it can make its best guess, maybe reading the sentence or two before or the sentence or two after and going, oh, that's an angry damn it. Or, oh, that's a sad damn it. And it might take the context of what was said before to determine that. Mm. Just like a human would, right? Like when we were studying acting, before we would say a line, we'd want to know what happened in the scene before or in moments before that, so that we can justify, you know, whatever you're going to say next.
Yeah.
So I think models would be an algorithm like this would need to be trained on enough data to be able to handle that, this kind of a task.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've trained a model, what they'll do is they'll save a portion of their data set that they don't use to train the model to kind of test and validate that what they've done is actually that the model that they've built and that they've trained works as expected, or where it doesn't, they can identify like, oh, you know what? It's really not good at handling slang. Maybe we need to get a larger data set that has a lot of slang examples and then train it on that. And then let's test it again and see if it picks up slang better. So it's a very iterative process. It can take a really long time, and they would need to do this for each language. You couldn't just train a model for, let's say, English and it just automatically worked for German. Yeah. Because the language, the syntax, the nuance it's different it's different per language. So they would create an individual algorithm for each language.
Like how long would, I mean, I guess it would, I get, my guess is the answer is as long as it takes, but like, how long do you estimate being able to say, okay, so we're pretty confident that the model we have right now can translate something okay enough to be used,
mm-hmm.
you know, where it would translate this script from Japanese to English. Like how long would just that take, do you think?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And ultimately I would probably answer this as easily as I could to another artist, which is like, how do you know a play that you're writing or a scene that you're writing has ever done? You would probably do is you would put it in front of someone, or you would do a reading, or you would do something, and you would see how moments land, how the actors work with it. You'd get feedback. And based on that feedback, you'd evaluate whether you feel good about it yet or not. And then you would make a decision. I'm going to keep working on it or I'm not. And the same is true for an algorithm. Ultimately, every time you're building any kind of a model, there are usually either metrics or evaluation metrics that you'll have in place, so that once you've trained a model and you're testing it, you can see how is it doing on these different you know, quantitative or qualitative metrics, right? Uh-huh. So on the quantitative side, it could be like how fast is it going and how many words could it spit out. On the qualitative side is like, how good was it? Did it, like when I put it in front of a reader and they read a whole chapter, could they notice a difference on a scale of 1 to 5? How good was it? So what I'm saying is there may be a number of different things that they want to measure when they're evaluating how good the model is. And there's a world where if their training set was good enough and they're using the right algorithm to train the model on, because new algorithms get published like every day, like research is constant in this field. So there's always new algorithms to try. It could work after the first training. Like it could be a couple of days, but really you'd have to have the right data set and the right algorithm, and you'd have to be okay with the results out of the box with like no, you know, optimization of that algorithm or trying more data or whatever.
Yeah.
In the commercial world, though, you know, what I've seen in my line of work is that typically it could take up to 4 months to get something that you feel is like a good start that's meaningful. And depending on who's working on that project, that could be it. Sometimes it can take up to a year before you get something. And what's really frustrating is it can take a year to improve something by like 1%. It can be really, really hard. So something where you're like, oh, it just keeps missing this thing. But once you guys fix this, what, it'll take a week? No, like depending on where it's falling short, it could take a week or it could take a year. That's what's really hard about AI is like, you're not writing a bunch of rules to solve problems. It works differently than that. So it's not a perfect science. It's like an art and a science when you're building an algorithm.
Yeah. And so like, I mean, I guess we're kind of dancing around some of these things, but like, what would you say are some of the major like cons to having something like this? If Crunchyroll were to, you know, further develop this, like what are some of the outcomes that would be not favorable?
Yeah, I mean, it's an important question, right? And ultimately, I want to broaden that question also because it's not just Crunchyroll for translations of anime, but it's also these publishers who are trying to translate manga. And once that happens, they'll be, you know, it'll get printed in those languages and then it'll get shipped off to different countries to be sold in retail stores or sold online. So I think there's a couple of cons. I mean, the first and most important one I want to start with is the impact on translator jobs.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I'm not a translator, but I would imagine that this is an industry that does not pay particularly well, especially for the amount of work that needs to be done. There's often not a substantial appreciation for literary work, like writers, just writers in general, unless you're a New York Times bestselling author. You know, the average people who do this work, you know, they probably get paid okay, but like, I don't imagine they get paid as much as they probably should. And I think this is going to impact them. I certainly do. I'll speak to this in a minute. I don't think that it'll completely eliminate them because, as I said, I really struggle to believe that these systems are going to be so good at catching some of the nuance. So I think that there'll probably always be humans in the loop, even when they're using some of these algorithms, even when the publishers are using these algorithms, even when Crunchyroll is using these algorithms. But you know, maybe the algorithm handles 70, 80% of the task of translating an episode or a chapter, and then a human, you know, handles the rest. So it might change the way these translators do work, and by extension to that, might decrease the amount that people are willing to pay them because the level of effort is not as much as it was before they were using AI. So that will impact people. As an extension to that, you know, it will probably lead to lower quality translations, at least for the first, you know, beginning period of these things being used, because even when you have a human in the loop who is like looking at a fully translated chapter or looking at a fully translated episode and is spot checking and going in and making sure things are good, these kinds of things are prone to human error. So things will probably slip through the cracks in ways that it might not have if the translator just did the whole job themselves. Right. Anytime you're checking someone else's work, like you didn't do it yourself. So, right. So this might have an impact on it. And I think depending on how bad it is, this could really blow up in their face, because I can only imagine how frustrated I would get if I was on Crunchyroll and the translation was garbage and like it was the episode of the season and like when it came out it was just so bad. Like I have very limited patience for that.
Yeah.
I imagine that if this starts happening as a trend, consumers will riot. Like I think it could actually hurt the manga publishing industry. I think it could hurt Crunchyroll if this is not done to a high quality of standard. And that backlash could prevent them from investing in this technology again and releasing it to the public for years until it's like perfect. So if they don't handle this well, they're just gonna have to, you know, eat it.
You know, like I am gonna shift gears, but then let's come right back, because like, do we even know how Crunchyroll is using AI now? Like, do we know if they have like a, like, or are they doing that? Well, we know that they're, pardon me, correct me if I'm wrong. We know that they're looking into this as well, or no, where this is just this company that we know of for fact is looking into doing this translation.
You're referring to the publishers investing into Orange.
Okay. That's the only thing we know for fact.
Yes. I actually think there's still a group of other publishers besides the one I mentioned at the top of the show that is also investing in Orange, and their intention is to use this company to translate their manga as well. So it's Orange that's doing this, and yeah, Crunchyroll had announced that they were exploring using AI for translation too. But as to answer your question, as far as if we know that Crunchyroll is using AI, they certainly are. They're using it in a couple of different ways. The first of which is probably the most obvious, is like recommendation systems. So, you know, probably everybody has seen that on Netflix or even on YouTube, like when you're watching a YouTube video, on the side, it shows you a list of videos. Those are not there on accident. Those are not there randomly. There is an algorithm behind the scenes that uses observations about what you watch, what you search for, what you start to watch but don't finish, and what other people who watch things like you watch, to decide what to suggest to you in real time when you're watching a video. And Netflix uses similar algorithms to suggest shows, so that when you open up Netflix on your TV or on your laptop, what you see there is decided upon by an algorithm, and that's the order in which the shows that they show you, you could take a look at, are visualized to you. So Crunchyroll uses similar algorithms, and that's pretty standard. But as a subscription business, most subscription businesses have plenty of ways that they use machine learning to, you know, maximize profits and operationally, you know, do things at a very high level. For example, I know for a fact other streaming platforms like Amazon Prime will use AI to try to predict how popular a title will be in a particular genre in a particular region of the world. And they might use some of those statistics to decide whether to renew a season, for example. Things like recommendation systems, things like building algorithms to predict when somebody's going to likely cancel their subscription. It's just called like churn prediction or churn analysis. That's the industry phrase. Things like forecasting, right? Whether you're forecasting how many new subscribers you'll probably have next month, or how much revenue you're going to generate, or forecasting the demand for a show. All of these things that I'm talking about are different use cases that a data science team at a company would take on as a part of their job. So there are engineers, there are data scientists that work at these companies who take advantage of all the data that they collect, and they build models with that data to take on these tasks that I've just described. And so data science is really a field, and they leverage AI algorithms and machine learning algorithms to do these things that I'm talking about.
So what we know from what you've said is Crunchyroll has to have an AI department doing something such as recommendations and then other things under data science.
Yeah, they're probably forecasting things like I said, like what shows are probably going to succeed well. They're probably forecasting how many new subscribers they're going to get every month based on, like, in real time, that prediction probably changes based on, like, how many people subscribe, new subscribers there were for the day. And there's tons of different things that they forecast. I wouldn't be surprised also if they're using AI to like monitor the comment sections, because like some people can be kind of like crazy and a little, I mean, so I wouldn't be surprised if they're moderating the comment section of episodes using AI too. But yeah, I think those are some of the things that that I know for a fact that Crunchyroll is doing, and some of the things I think they might be doing.
And those also sound like things that, like we were kind of mentioning earlier, will inevitably help our quality of life as people that use Crunchyroll.
Certainly, yeah. Ultimately, I'll give you like one very tangible example. Like I gave an example of how they might want to forecast like when people are going to churn, which is a business term to mean like they're going to end their subscription. Mm-hmm. And let's say they've built a model that does that. Now, as a regular everyday consumer, you might be like, how is that going to help me? Like that just helps them rake in the profits and, you know, keep a pulse on how much they're going to make. And they're tracking to see if I'm going to leave. Like you may not immediately be able to go, oh, I see how that might benefit me. But behind the scenes, if they have an algorithm that does that prediction, they might be able to see like, oh my gosh, it's like predicting that like a big chunk of our customers in a particular part of the US are likely going to leave. I wonder why that is. Once the model or the algorithm flags that, they'll do an investigation. They'll like deep dive into it. And then they might discover, oh my God, like all these people in the Northeast are leaving because they keep complaining that they can't even log in. So there might be a technical problem. Mm-hmm. And we just like completely missed this. And we were about to lose our customers. So bam, an engineer gets notified, they go fix it, and everyone can log in again. Or, hey, like, people are frustrated with not enough like romance content. That's what we learned when we looked at the people who were predicted to or forecasted to leave. We noticed that all of those people predominantly watched romance anime, and we've noticed a negative trend in romance content on our site. That's probably why they're leaving. Bam, now they're going to go proactively get a license to more romance shows, and it might stick around. So I think that these models that I'm referring to that perform these different tasks, they really empower Crunchyroll with insights and the ability to like understand what's going wrong and what's going well. And it'll help them make decisions that hopefully translate into better experiences for us. It might not always, but sometimes, you know, it really might.
That is surely the hope. So like the reason I asked that is, so when we're talking, they're obviously like, if I feel like the need to sort of say this, because like, I'm in the arts world in general, right? Like we are actors. And so like, this was a huge topic of conversation. We actually had a whole episode on it, you know, with the actor strike that happened last year and the use of AI, you know, and some of the really shitty, for lack of a better term, contracts that were being offered to actors. And the way that this industry works is like, you often feel like you have to take opportunity because of X, Y, and Z reasons. So like we, you know, so there is a lot of uncomfortability, I think, in the art space in general. And like anime is definitely an art form. I mean, the art of anime, the voice acting of anime, these are all things that people are afraid of. We actually even talked to Amanda Turin about this a little bit. I don't know if we did that on or if we did that off camera or what have you, but you know, because they were developing things that, oh, you know, people that aren't in the AI space from a technical perspective would have some pause of like, okay, wait, are they going to take two tracks of my voice and then they're going to be able to generate an entire script using my voice? And then like, am I going to get paid for that? And like, am I going to be out of a job? You know, like, and that is very much a conversation in this space. But, you know, when we're talking about using automation to translate a script, there can be some pros to that. And I do kind of just, in an attempt to give myself and our listeners a little bit more of a well-rounded picture of what this could look like, what are some of the things that could go right and could be helpful about this?
Yeah, so I mean, there are a number of things I think that we should keep in mind to really think about the full perspective here. And one of the main things is that, you know, 2 weeks ago, I think we talked about piracy. And there's a lot of data that supports that one of the main reasons, particularly with manga, not necessarily with anime, but with manga, one of the reasons why manga is so pirated is because people do not have the patience to wait for the chapters to come out in their language in an official capacity. Mm-hmm. They just They just want it immediately and understandably, right? Like, you know, I've seen not often, maybe a few times in my life where a Bleach chapter came out in German before it came out in English. And I was like, what is going on? And it's just, I guess the German scanlation and translator community got a hold of the chapter either sooner or more aggressively than others. And they handled the business for their business for German faster than the Americans did. I don't know, but, or whoever translates into English, they don't have to be American, but my point stands. So it's a big contributor to manga piracy specifically. And if, in theory, if we have these models that are able to take something and translate it really quickly, it could mean a faster release of new chapters, new volumes that people could buy in the stores. And there wouldn't be this lag from when the chapters come out to when a volume hits the floor for those that want like the hard copy experience. So that's really great. And then in theory, it could also mean that if people are able to access the chapters from legitimate places or even buy them, it could mean that less money is flowing out into the piracy market and more into the traditional sources, boosting the industry and hopefully translating eventually into paying studios and artists and mangakas and illustrators more, because there's more money being generated, you know, legitimately. So that's one good thing. The other thing is that from the perspective of making anime and manga accessible, it means making anime and manga significantly more accessible in multiple languages more quickly. If I had to guess, if I was to think about the whole database in Crunchyroll of anime, I don't know, maybe 10% are translated into Portuguese, when Brazil is probably like the number two or number three market in the world for anime behind the United States and Japan. Imagine if like tomorrow we could put out, even if it wasn't like a perfect translation, something that market could watch and just immediately they gain access to everything. Right? So like that's pretty great. But you know, like I said earlier, I think those are some of the main things, but really I don't see the translators going away forever. I think there will always be like humans in the loop of this process, working together with the algorithms, especially here, because I struggle to believe there's ever going to be a time where an algorithm could listen to an episode of Jujutsu Kaisen and say that, like Jennifer Lawrence example that you gave earlier, that is such a shot in the dark. You would just have to have so much context into pop culture to make a joke like that. You know what I mean? And not like accidentally say Marilyn Monroe. Like, I don't know. Like I'm just, you know.
Can you imagine?
I'm just, that was just like a random thing that came to my mind. But like, I struggle to believe that that is going to be the case. So yeah, I mean, I think there are some definite benefits there from that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, something that I'm kind of formulating as I speak, I struggle to believe that if the algorithms did a okay job at translating it, and then that was the final product put out, I struggle to believe that that would last more than a week. I mean, the internet space would wreak absolute havoc.
Yeah.
People would cancel, like, it wasn't even anyone's business. It would only go downhill if they were like, oh, well, it's like good enough. It's like, no, it's freaking not. It's absolutely not good enough.
I was talking to somebody at work today about filming this podcast today, and I was talking to them about what we were going to be discussing, and we were making a joke that, because we both watch Bleach, me and my coworker, and we were talking about Ichigo and how Ichi means one and Go means what, strawberry, I think, in Japanese. And so how funny would it be if somebody was just in the middle of, did I get that wrong? Is it not strawberry?
I don't know. I think it is. Right? Yeah, that's the thing with him. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know
it's either strawberry or berry. What? It's a fruit, right? Like, I don't remember which one, but it's one of the fruits. And we were just thinking about how funny it would be if, like, in the thousand-year blood war arc, we're in the middle of, like, a super intense battle or maybe the finale, and someone is like, one strawberry. Thank you for everything you've done. it would be really funny. And it would totally, totally ruin the experience.
No. They would burn whoever put that out to the ground.
Absolutely.
They would go bankrupt. Like, they would go bankrupt if they did that.
I genuinely wouldn't be surprised if there were lawsuits. I'm not kidding. Like,
yeah.
Like, harm. Like somebody would be like, I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole, the potential is there for sure.
Did we talk about, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but did we talk about the voice actor, the video that we saw for the voice actor of, I'm going to not remember his name, from Solo Leveling, the main character?
Sun Jinwoo? Wait, why don't I remember it?
I know. I think it's Sungjin.
Sojinwoo? What? I do not remember his name.
I don't know. Anyway, that character, right? So the original, the Japanese voiceover artist did the episode at the way end. Did we talk about this on the podcast?
I don't know.
Or no? There's apparently a really iconic line in Solo Leveling.
Mm-hmm.
That I feel like I'm allowed to say the anime says, yeah. It's arise.
Yeah.
Right? So the delivery the community did not like the delivery of the Japanese voiceover artist.
Oh, really?
Yes. Like, they did not.
It wasn't epic enough.
Like, how they did that. And I honestly went right over my head. I'm like, yo, this is cool. Like, I did not. But they didn't like how that voiceover artist did it. So people were all over the English voice actor. You better get it right. It better be good. Blah, blah, blah. And it was so funny. He made a video. I wish I could remember his name. He's so good. I would love to actually say his name so that we can all find the video and give him love. Because he was like, but what if I... He's like, everyone's bothering me about this line. And first of all, this person did it phenomenally and you're all being picky or whatever. But if you keep coming to my comments on all of my other videos and all the other things I do and you keep talking about this, I think I'm going to do the voiceover like this. And he just proceeds to do like the worst, most inappropriate reading of the line, like arise or like wakey wakey, like there's so many good ones, and he goes, okay, so yeah, finally leave me the fuck alone and let me do my job.
Yeah.
But if like if cook. We were let me cook. Like, if we as a community are capable of that, like, it would not last one okay translation.
For sure. For a major
the help
title.
Of people. Yes, yeah,
100%. And that's why I said that earlier, right? Like, that's a big risk that they're taking on in doing this, right? Ultimately, this really could backfire and people won't forget it. They will hold them accountable. They'll say, you remember when you tried to do that last time? And that's why, so, you know, this company better be really good, and the people who are supporting the translations better be on their game, because if not, it's definitely going to backfire. For sure.
Yeah. We do not play out here. The anime community, we do not play with this. but like something that we were kind of touching on, like, I'm like, what are your thoughts on, like, I don't know, especially with the actor strike, right? This is where a lot of my context comes from. With the actor strike, you know, there were contracts being put out of, okay, yeah, come for the day. We're going to make a recording of, like, your face, your body, your voice. Mm-hmm. And by signing this contract, we're able to use it on any major project that we want. And you don't have to get paid for that, right? So, obviously, like, ridiculous contract. First of all, ridiculous contract. Also, I don't even think AI is at the point where that could ever look good. But that's another thing. Like, what do you think an ethical approach to this looks like from a business perspective? Like, I don't know. Like, or what do you think Crunchyroll, or what do you think, I keep saying Crunchyroll and I truly mean to say Orange. Like, how do you think Orange does this right and ethically? What do you think that looks like?
I mean, well, first let me say on the, just because when we did talk about the actor strike, and many of our viewers may not have been, not have seen that episode where I mentioned this, and I want to be clear, I'm definitely team actor on that side. Like your own likeness and your own data and who you are. My perspective is that you should always have complete control over that. And, you know, there are some really great groups of people, both on the lobbyist side and also within the government, that are fighting every day to give consumers rights that are worthy of being reviewed in this digital age. And California in particular has a great law where there's no business that can collect data from you, where if you call them and ask them or you email them, they can't refuse to tell you all the data they have on you. And if you requested it to be deleted, not only do they have to delete it by law, but they have to prove that they did. And only California has that law in the United States. And I think it's phenomenal. And I think there's legislation coming that will likely be federal. And obviously in Europe, they have GDPR that handles a lot of this stuff too. And I'm in complete favor of people being able to own their own likeness and own their own data. And I think it's a crazy contract that the industry tried to sign. And I want to make my point clear.
I know. I didn't mean to, in my head, that your point was a given. So I am happy that you actually I want to echo, you can speak for me with that sentiment as well. So yeah.
Not everyone knows this, but like, you know, before I got into this space, I was an actor too. So I, you know, have not forgotten where I came from. But to that end, I'm excited to answer your question. I think I'm going to answer this question not specific to Orange or specific to Crunchyroll, but I think all businesses, and not just businesses, I think government too, I think all organizations and any kind of organization that is using AI should be thinking about having, you know, processes and responsibilities and in place within their organization to ensure that they are leveraging AI in a legal, in a safe, in a compliant, in a ethically acceptable manner. I think that there are frameworks that there's not like a de facto, here is the framework to doing it right. Yeah. And I say this because I think that the nature of the business and who that business serves has to like go into the framework. For example, I would expect hospitals to have a slightly different perspective than like Nintendo, right? Like there are some processes I would want to be in place and certain people to be accountable in a hospital that's dealing with AI and data that like my Nintendo Switch engineering team, I'm not so worried about, right? Yeah. So yeah. I do think it's like industry specific. I think it's business specific. I think it has to relate to the data that they're collecting and who and the customer they ultimately serve. But nonetheless, I think it's really any organization's responsibility to have some internal framework in place where they are ensuring that, you know, that they're sticking true to what the law says they need to do, that they're being transparent about what they're doing with AI as much as possible, that they create a board to observe and assess the ethical, you know, implications of what they're trying to do with AI, and that they have people who are paid to monitor the way their organization does things. And if they set out a charter of like, here's how we're going to do it, that there are people dedicated to making sure they follow through on that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that goes everywhere from like the policies and processes they build all the way down to like how they build the algorithm. So for example, for a hospital, I would expect one of those basic principles to be like, you can't share my data to anyone publicly. Like, my medical information is private between me and my doctor. And so, like, if that's a principle that you have and you build an algorithm that accidentally leaks it, that's a big problem. Like, you have a principle, you need to stick to it. You have bylaws or processes and you need to stick to those things. So I think it's got to be like, all businesses need to be extremely clear on what is their policy, what are their processes, what is their plan to use AI, are they going to, how transparent are they going to be, and how do those four things impact the way they build AI systems, even the data that they use, right? One interesting fact that you might find interesting, this is like a complete aside, is I was learning about this recently. There's a huge racial disparity in healthcare AI. And it's because Caucasian people so disproportionately are willing to share their healthcare data compared to that of minorities. And so as a result, there's going to be a disproportionate innovation of AI-related solutions in the next decade because of that fact. They just have more data from Caucasian people. And so that sucks. And it's you know, there's a lot of underlying reasons for why minorities are afraid to give their data, and it's super justified. Yeah. But it translates into that, right? So when I talk about being ethical and eliminating bias, for example, in the data that you pick to train these models, you got to think about that. If you're going to say, if you're Google and you're going to say, like, we're here to help everyone, then you better make sure someone is collecting data from everyone and not just the people who are privileged. And you know what I'm saying? Like, everything from the data to the algorithm to how it'll work, you got to make sure it aligns with your values. So that's what I think companies should be doing, is all of that. They need frameworks in place. They need checks and balances. They need to be transparent to the public. They need to ensure there's no bias in their training data, in their models, with the data that they choose to use. And I think if people do that, I think it's the right thing to do. I also think that in situations like this where you might be taking jobs, you know, if I was Crunchyroll personally, and if somebody asked me to be on their board of like, well, what could we do? We're going to be taking jobs. I'd say, well, if you know you're going to disproportionately affect a large group of people, create programs for them where they can learn new skills and immediately translate into a different role without any disruption of employment. Why not? They're smart people. They can do things other people can't do. No one in companies likes to create content. They're writers. Like, there are ways to take a human approach to adopting AI that, like, can still be profitable. And I think businesses have a responsibility to figure out those things before they really hurt large groups of people in ways that just are greed-based. That's my personal take on it, but I think hopefully these frameworks can catch these things before they choose to use a model that does something like this.
I just hope that that happens. I mean, you know, we have been swallowed, for lack of a better term, by large corporations before. Like, it happens in various ways. And, like, I would really hate for large corporations to really use this in, you know, an unethical way. But if we're being some, you know, if I'm being optimistic, if I'm being hopeful, when I'm thinking about the question, like, is using AI to translate manga and anime a good thing? Manga and anime, I mean, my biggest thing is, like, it's still kind of a maybe for me. Like, in a ways, yes, which we kind of talked about. In a ways, no, which we kind of talked about. Like, I do not believe that if it wasn't good, it would go and come see my face. You know, like, I don't think that I would ever see something that isn't absolutely good because of the way, like I said, because of the industry and the standards that we have for intaking those things, especially, like, if, you know, or big publishers that we know always put out a manga I can read, put out something that it doesn't make sense in my language. It's never going to fly. It's just not going to happen. Like, they won't do it.
Right.
So it's not like I'm so worried about the content I have. Like, I don't think it will happen. I don't think I'll ever see bad content. But like it, I do fear for the people that where maybe they make their livelihood off translating these things and they are the in-house person at so and so place doing this. Like, I would worry about them. So it's really a kind of a toss for me. But if we're thinking optimistically, where they are going to provide, you know, maybe this person gets to take on more of like a managerial overseeing kind of thing because they're just having scripts, you know, handed to them and then they're editing from there. And, you know, maybe there's more people doing that. And maybe there's like, okay, you get this. And then there's, we need more people because it has to go through a round two. And then we need someone to oversee it at the last. Like, if that can happen, if we can create larger programs, then I could see this being a very good thing because I would love for, at the core of this podcast, anime being more accessible to more communities so that more of us can have a deeper appreciation for this incredible, incredible life-changing art form.
I agree. I think it's also just to be brief on my thoughts on what you've just said, it just made me realize something like it's easy for us to be critical because we're English speakers and English is the do most dominant language in the world. And so, like, what we have access to in terms of anime and manga is pretty vast, likely compared to other smaller languages.
Oh, yeah.
How cool. I imagine, you know, the largest backlash will come from English-speaking countries, but how cool would it be, you know, for countries with like exceptionally small numbers of people who speak their language to be able to read a chapter of something and see it in their local language,
It'd be
to
so
be
special.
able to get there one day for all anime and manga would be like incredible. Something that we're nowhere near being able to do right now. It's just wouldn't happen, you know? So yeah, I think that's pretty special, at least on the positive side.
I think about like a kid who's into it, like Naruto is their hero, and like an anime chapter comes out and they can immediately read it in their language, you know, within the week, even if their language is like, you know, just a
Yoruba, or
smaller
yeah.
percentage. Yeah, like that, the idea of that, the dream of that makes me want to say that this is a good thing, but definitely not, I don't know. Like, there are cons. So we shall see, and we will report on things as they happen and as news comes out. But this is definitely, you know, this is definitely the place you want to come if you're interested in AI and you're interested in its effects in the anime industry and how it's being used. Honestly, honestly. And with that, this has been our anime show. I have been a Green Queen.
And I'm Bitch Monster.